We have seen that the very base of the Grand Rapids economy, the Itasca Paper Company, is struggling and facing many problems by 1916. Well, that year is going to see a major change coming to Grand Rapids. And let's prepare for that change by looking at the town itself in 1916. The day of the lumberjack and the timber industry that once comprised the very reason for the existence of Grand Rapids was already fading into memory. Mrs. K.C. Lent, who had arrived way back in 1872 and who had come to be known as the Grand Old Woman of Grand Rapids, fondly recalled those days when the real old-time lumberjacks, not like those of the present age, made up the clientele of the town. She reminisced, "Times have changed. Logging is nearly a thing of the past. The farmer is crowding out the logger. Fine farms are now tilled where but a few years ago several thousand men were engaged in cutting down trees." But she also mused that the change was for the better, as the country is being filled up with families. Mrs. Lent concluded that while she enjoyed recalling those old days and their many memories, still the hopes for the future development of the county discounts all of them. James McAlpin had been one of those real lumberjacks. He arrived in Grand Rapids after an absence of 35 years, intent on looking up some of his old comrades and visiting with his business brothers. Like Mrs. Lent, he keenly felt the numerous changes that had so transformed Grand Rapids from what he called the small, albeit lusty and noisy youngster, and had come to its present state. McAlpin appealed to residents for action to preserve for future generations the story of the earliest settlers of the upper Mississippi, and he emphasized that that history must soon be written, or it cannot be written right. He cited Romulus and Remus and Daniel Boone as important builders of the past, and linked them to the pioneers of Itasca County, saying that they were a lot that were worthwhile. They were men who did things. He, too, acknowledged that the new Grand Rapids showed important progress. Dan Gunn and Hubert Powers were among a group celebrating the 60th birthday of C.C. McCarthy in 1916. They also were in a reminiscent mood. According to the Herald Review, they spent much of the evening recalling stories about the Grand Rapids that by then seemed to lie so far in the past. The last log drives on the Mississippi were taking place. In the spring of 1914, the river from the Winnebogoches Dam to the Pokegama Dam was pretty well filled with logs on their way downstream to pass through the paper mill reservoir and dam. In 1915, the drive was considerably smaller, and in 1916, no logs passed through the mill dam until late midsummer. The 1916 drive was only one-third as large as that of the previous year, with only about 5% of the timber that had been rushed down the river during the boom years of the 1890s. As the logs passed by Grand Rapids, the Herald Review commented that the small drive seemed only a reminder of past years. Rumors that it was the last Mississippi drive to the Twin Cities abounded. But in 1917, there was one more drive, even smaller than that of 1916. During the summer, the boom logs that in the past had held and guided the timber were also floated down the river. The company that for 15 years had used Grand Rapids as a headquarters from which to direct drives for all the logging companies in the region above the Pokegama Dam closed its doors, said the Herald Review. It seems hard to believe that the great lumber industry in the territory served by the Mississippi is practically at an end. Henceforth, the smaller quantities of timber from the few remaining stands were sent to regional sawmills or shipped elsewhere by rail. The day of the great Twin Cities lumber mills was also coming to an end. An advertisement for clothing in a 1916 issue of the Herald Review symbolizes the new era. Unlike the numerous turn-of-the-century ads directed to lumberjacks, this one addressed in large block letters farmers, and only under that banner in much smaller type was an "and loggers" noted. High hopes remained that a thriving agricultural base could replace the lumber industry in Itasca County. Farming activities were encouraged in every possible way, even as the paper company seemed to be faltering. The growing number of farms utilizing cutover pinelands in the vicinity of Grand Rapids impressed a visitor from the southern part of the state. He described the farmer who was replacing the lumberjack in the north woods with his family housed in a humble structure, his yoke of oxen or his horses breaking up the soil, pulling out the stumps, and subduing the land. The Itasca County Independent printed a letter in which a farmer encouraged others from his former home in Iowa to establish farms by Grand Rapids, where the man of small means can find and make a home at the lowest possible cost. He extolled the agricultural prospects of the region, concluding that the low-priced lands of this section afford probably the best haven left to the land seeker. And I might just say that, like all of these kinds of appeals for more people to move to the area, they don't mention the short growing season. They don't mention the cold summer nights. They don't mention the frosts that come oftentimes into June and begin again in August. That's just kind of passed over. But at any rate, one crop just beginning to receive attention in the area seemed particularly promising. Potatoes, growing in Itasca County as early as 1860, and a frequent staple in lumber camp gardens, were only in 1913 and 1914 beginning to be considered an ideal crop for northern Minnesota. Itasca County potatoes, described in the Herald Review as the large, smooth kind, I guess that means a russet, were gradually being sought in other parts of the nation as both seed and food. In 1916, when local farmers escaped the potato crop failure affecting many sections of the United States and obtained exceptionally good prices for their crops, citizens became more certain than ever that agriculture was the key to the future of the area. The Independent reported that by November, 45 carloads of potatoes had been shipped from Grand Rapids, bringing about $30,000 into the local economy. Another 17 carloads shipped the next February brought the highest prices yet realized. Speculation was rife that what wheat was to the Red River Valley and corn was to Iowa, potatoes would be to Itasca County. Although dairying and general farming in Itasca County were still common, the new success with potatoes was largely responsible for a Herald Review article stating that along with manufacturing possibilities, the future of Grand Rapids was dependent on that most stable of industries, agriculture. According to the newspaper, the best agricultural lands of northern Minnesota, rich and fertile, extended from Grand Rapids in all directions. The article continued, the chief conversation in the business houses of Grand Rapids and neighboring villages centers not upon mining or upon industrial questions, but upon agriculture. And once again, no mention was made of the disadvantages of that far north location or of the fact that the small scattered fields in the former pinelands of Itasca County were unsuitable for the impending mechanization of farming. And as well, simple fact that they're not all that fertile, even though such claims had been made for them. Let's take a look at an advertising brochure attempting to entice still more farmers to Itasca County. This was widely disseminated in southern Minnesota. And it starts, in March of 1916, W.J. Danson left Iowa. He'd heard about Itasca County, where a man with small capital has a chance to make good. He had three possessions of value to the settler, $50 in money, a horse, and a determination to succeed. He drove all the way up from Davenport, coming into the split-hand country south of Grand Rapids, where he had purchased land. He arrived in April and then began a struggle for the success he had so long desired. 4 years later, Mr. Danson had his farm of 60 acres practically cleared, a modern six-room house under construction, and money in the bank. Potatoes did it, he said. Itasca County is full of men who started with nothing and made good on the land. It is first of all a place where a man may invest his labor in the land and make himself a farm. Hundreds have done it. Success is in the air. Every man knows that just as sure as he applies himself to making a farm, he will win. There will be hindrances and a struggle, but he will win. There will be hard work, but with the Itasca County soil, its invigorating climate, its cheap lands, and the best markets in the world right at hand, any man who puts his shoulder to the wheel will succeed. Every section of the county gives evidence of substantial success. Every farmer can tell a story revealing the possibilities of Itasca County. That man who lives in the comfortable house, who owns that big red barn, might have had but a shack and a stable of poles 5 years ago. An acre of land will furnish subsistence. 5 acres will provide fair earnings and a little to put by. Cleared land will produce more per acre here than elsewhere in Minnesota. Well, what a lot of hype in that article, really pushing it awfully hard. And it's going to be a price to pay for that. You're enticing so many people up here who come with nothing, expecting what they've been promised with all this future prosperity, and they're not finding it. And the depression is just around the corner. We're going to have to return to the effects of this recruitment later. But at any rate, in 1916, it's in full bloom, and the hopes were very high for agriculture.